Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
I'm excited about today's episode because we've got a great guest on the show. His name is Lane Kawaoka. Lane, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Clayton.
Lane is an expert in passive income, and he runs a website called simplepassivecashflow.com. He still works as a project engineer, and he works a licensed professional and civil industrial engineer. That's where he started. So that's his world. So he comes from that really analytical world of engineering, which I know in my past, working with a lot of different engineers, can really kind of hold them back because they tend to be overly analytical, take a long time to make decisions and crunch all kinds of numbers. And then 4 years later, they still haven't bought a rental property. So Lane is a real estate investor and he focuses on cash flow. He talks about building that freedom number and getting all that passive income. And he focuses on class C and B multifamily apartment investing. So we're going to talk about passive income today. We're going to talk about why buying the house that you live in, living in a home that you own is a bad move, and just the current market and how everything looks right now. Lane, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Clayton. I think you and I had a chat probably about almost 2 years ago. I'm going to set up a call with you and appreciate the time to chat back then and see your podcast is doing big and great things.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me on your podcast as well. It was a real treat, and we got to talk a lot of business strategy. I love that, and we talked about how to plan projects, and we talked about things holding you back in life. So we'll link to that in the podcast page as well, the show notes page for today's episode. But so, Lane, tell me a little bit. Now, I butchered your name like five times, but I eventually got it. I got it correct. So Kawaoka, Lane Kawaoka. What name is that? Where does that come from? And what part of the country do you live in?
That's Japanese, but I originally from Hawaii. Grew up there, and I was living in Seattle for the last 14 years, but just this week I moved right back home to Hawaii because I finally have the passive cash flow that I can kind of do what I want. I think you mentioned on when you're on my podcast, you mentioned the phrase, "I would be happy when." And I kind of wrote that down. Every 6 months I track that, and it always changed. And it's always better to kind of live what you want. And if you're investing in real estate and these passive rentals, then you should be able to achieve whatever you think of.
That's amazing. So you hit your passive income number, you hit your freedom number, so to speak, and you moved back to Hawaii and you're still working as an engineer, but now you get to enjoy the riches and the beauty of Hawaii, right?
Right. The 10% more expenses than California and the 20% less pay.
Is that right? So less pay, more expenses.
Right. Doesn't make sense, right?
That's amazing. So let's talk a little bit about your strategy, the things you started out investing in you were started investing in A-class properties, right? It seems though that you shifted. You and I talked a little bit about that. That was my sort of worst mistake or my biggest myth in real estate investing, thinking that, oh, that's what you have to invest in, A-class properties, the most expensive, right? The ones with the best tenants. It turns out it's not the case at all. They end up being the biggest problems. They have the biggest things to fix. They have the biggest entitled tenants that are, can be a big pain in the butt. So you kind of started with A-class rentals in Seattle. But take me through some of your history. How did you get to where you are today in Hawaii?
Yeah, so I started off and I graduated from University of Washington and I went right to work. You know, always on that linear path of get a good education, get a good job to save for the primary residence, which I did. You know, I saved up 80 grand in the first few years of working, being a cheapo and doing all these silly things to save money. But yeah, I got that first property and, you know, I was traveling a lot for work. Probably it was 100% of the time. So I was only home on Saturday and I thought it was a little silly having this big home to myself, an A-class home. So I just started renting it out and I saw how the mousetrap worked, you know, how I think it was a $350,000 home. So if you're thinking of rent to value ratios in this A-class area in Seattle, and this is before the boom, this is 2009. It rented for about $2,200 and the mortgage on that was $1,600. So there was that delta or difference of definitely a few hundred bucks in there. And at the time, I thought that was pretty good beer money for a young 20-something-year-old. So that was when the bulbs went off.
So I want to do the ROI on that. So give me the rent again for the month. It
was $2,200.
$2,200 a month times 12. Times 0.6. So $15,000 a year divided by what was the cost of the house again?
I think the mortgage was $1,600 a month.
Okay, $1,600. What was the total cost of the house?
$350,000.
So $350,000. So that was a net 4% ROI. And that was in a good economy at the time? Or that was right
that
around?
It was probably about 2009, 2010.
So you were kind of trucking along with this this property with a mortgage on it, paying the mortgage, bringing in some extra cash. Did you kind of stick with that property or when did you kind of maybe make the switch and start to see how this all could work in a different way, how you could start to really maximize returns?
Yeah, so I bought that property and I lived on the road for a few years, which allowed me to aggressively save for the down payment money. And I bought a duplex after that in Seattle also. But at the time, I was listening to podcasts and reading all these books and exactly what you mentioned. I mean, only the silly people buy A-class rentals. I mean, the people who want to tell people at the cocktail parties that they own a rental here and they're making like negative percent on it.
Right.
So I got a little smarter. And, you know, I knew I probably should be in like C-plus, B-minus homes. But, you know, I mean, I did the numbers and I got like a B-plus, A-minus rental, little older build, 1980s build, duplex, and I bought that in Seattle. So the numbers were a little bit better, and I purchased that, I think, a few years later in 2011. So definitely before the uptick started to happen after 2012. So after that point, you know, I was all ready up and loaded up, you know, because I had this additional cash flow in coming in from the first two rentals. So kind of looking for that third rental, and then the market just started appreciating, and then I just wasn't cash flowing on this stuff, you know, when I did the numbers, and I was like, okay, is this the end of my investing career, right? Like it's just that the numbers don't make any sense. And then, you know, I started to pivot and try all kinds of things. I would go to these meetings where the home auctions, because I heard that was a good idea from some internet forum. And I just looked around the room and I just seen all this unsophisticated like Microsoft and tech money of all these like 50, 60-year-old bozos who didn't know what they were doing, just bidding each other up. And it just made no sense to me. And this is back in 2012. And that was a long time ago. And at that point, then I started to look into the whole out of state, you know, the blue collared $100,000 properties and less. And I just jumped right in and did it.
That's great. So now you focus on those properties in that C and B range, which is great. That's what we do. And that's how, you know, I've been able to achieve financial freedom, and it sounds like you have as well. And you've been able to move back to Hawaii and now focus on that. I want to talk a little bit about the nation's demand for affordable housing. I know you're passionate about this, and that's why you go after these C and B properties, right? Because there is such an insatiable desire right now for these affordable houses. Tell us about that and kind of maybe dive into some of the data on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just undeniable. I mean, look at all the charts and graphs. I mean, the good thing about America and why the economy is probably one of the better economies out there, other than the undeniable military that we have that we can bully people around, is that the United States has a young workforce and an increasing population. I mean, look at Japan or all these some of these European countries. I think Japan's probably the poster child for this. Is they've got an aging population and they're going nowhere real fast, and which is one of the reasons that they have the negative interest rates out there. But America, I mean, part of the good thing about immigration is that you keep having people coming in, and they usually have the higher birth rates, and they need places to stay, and which is why the government tries to stimulate workforce housing, and which is kind of the reason I've kind of taken a little pivot point personally to multifamily syndications to take advantage of the Fannie Mae loans and Freddie Mac loans, because that's where they're incentivizing, just like how they are a single family home.
That's great. That's great. And there is this just insatiable desire for rentals right now. I mean, that's why our rentals fill up so quick, you know, and why they're, you know, you have lines out the door at property management offices. Now, that doesn't mean they're all qualified tenants. You know, you want to weed through them all, but holy smokes. I mean, they're just not building new homes. You know, people need a place to live, and they need to be where these houses are located, right? So there maybe is a FedEx distribution hub that they work at. Maybe there is a hospital that they work at that they need to have housing. There's all of these jobs in these areas where you and I invest, but there's not the housing available.
Right. I always come back to secondary markets with robust economies. So the first thing there is the secondary market. You don't want to be in a Seattle, Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, because that's where all your unsophisticated money and institutional money. I mean, institutional money is all the big hedge funds and insurance companies and Wall Street. And they get paid when they place money into these investments.
Right.
So they're looking for like a sub 5-6%. And you don't want to be playing with these people, nor do you want to be playing with the wine sipping dude who doesn't know what he's doing.
Right.
Who knows more about code than how a home is built. So yeah, he's trying to stay away from that. And I get a little outside of their reach, and I go to the secondary markets. And, you know, I'm a little torn on tertiary markets. Right now they're doing pretty well just because of the market, and tertiary markets, that's the third ring of locations. You know, I mean, it's not really categorized by population, but it kind of is. I mean, in Washington, it'd be like a Pasco, Washington, or a Waco, Texas, or I don't know, what are some of the tertiary markets out you, Clayton?
Yeah, you know, maybe like out like Youngstown, Ohio, or something like that, outside of Pittsburgh, or you know, places like that. Sort of the ring around the more populous areas.
Yeah, it's like a 50,000-100,000 population or less.
Right. Yeah, I haven't had a lot of luck in those areas. I mean, look, you can still, that's not to say I don't have some in some tertiary markets. I've got some in some Pennsylvania places that are rented to this day. And they're never vacant. So, but to replicate what I do there on a regular basis is difficult. You know, to get consistent properties or consistent deals is kind of more difficult. The infrastructure might not be there. And the amount of jobs also might not be there as well. So,
right.
Might it might be closer to that one horse town where you've got one kind of big employer or two employers. And I'm not a big fan of that. I mean, that's what Memphis went through, you know, and that's why I'm not there, because we saw what happened when the economy collapsed in places like Memphis, you know, and Little Rock. Memphis particularly was like a one horse town, and everyone lost their job. Crime went through the roof, you know.
Like Detroit too.
And now, fortunately, with Detroit, you've got a lot of big companies have moved in there. So now that infrastructure has been, you know, has been rebuilt. So now you've got Quicken Loans, and I have a lot of properties in Detroit, and they're always rented, you know. So it's like back in the day when everyone moved out, and now all of these new companies have built factories, and you know, they're sort of American-based jobs, distribution centers, and things like that. That's why I love those areas. But you can still find deals. You know, you can still find deals in these tertiary markets. It's just a matter of how much work do you want to put into, you know, to keeping that your foot on the gas there, I guess. Today's episode is brought to you by Property Czar. If you don't know that name, you better get used to hearing it, because if you work with different property management companies around the country, or maybe you have 50 properties in your portfolio or 10 properties in your portfolio and you manage them yourself, you are the property manager, you need to check out Property Czar. The question for you, do you need a great property management software? You've tried a bunch of them. You think, wait, these are way too expensive. I don't want to pay this much per month. Holy cow, that's expensive. Maybe you haven't found the right one for you just yet. I've tried so many different property management softwares over the years, and most of them, God, they're just not good. That's the bottom line. They're just lacking in a lot of key areas. So that's where Property Czar comes in. It's a web-based property management software, and it's designed for portfolios of all sizes. Property Czar includes all the features of the leading software vendors at a price that's affordable for even the smaller portfolios. Whether you manage 10 properties or 10,000 units, Property Czar's base entry point is very affordable. Now, what's great about Property Czar, I had a chance to really be knee-deep in the beta process for the development of this software, and so I got to really see how this was unfolding, and I got to say, it has everything you need to manage your properties effectively. It comes with complete accounting system in addition to calculating your cap rate, your cash-on-cash return. With Property Czar, you can track your assets, you can screen your tenants, you can accept online payments from your tenants, conduct on-site inspections, submit online applications, communicate with email or text, or even post your vacancies to the major rental sites. So what's cool about it is you could have a work order to fix, you know, a toilet or a sink or something like that. And Property Czar will in fact allow you that once you submit that work order, it will also text your contractor and it will send them a push notification to let them know, here's where the work order is taking place. Here's the address. Please get over there and fix the toilet. So again, if you are a small property management company yourself and you're looking for some great software, you've got to check it out. Tenants can even submit work orders along with pictures via the mobile app. So maybe they're home right now. The tenants are saying, hey, my sink is backed up. They can take a picture of it. They can submit it right to the portal for Property Czar. You can also set reminders to change those HVAC filters or service other equipment. And a lot of property management companies have to, you know, they have those set reminders. This is built right into the software. So you've got to check it out. Property Czar is one of the most user-friendly applications on the market. But just don't take our word for it. You can try it for free. So find out what Property Czar is, why it's quickly becoming the property management solution for portfolios of all sizes. And right now, my listeners can start a free trial. That's right, free and no credit card required. So go check it out. Go to Property Czar, that's PropertyZar.com/MorrisInvest. PropertyZar.com/MorrisInvest. Check them out. Thanks, Property Czar. I want to talk to you a little bit about the Wall Street dogma that you talk about on your show and on your website. You talk about, you know, most people are sort of duped into these like garbage investments, as you say, you know, in their 401k. And only like the insiders are getting rich off of your money. So explain that, and explain like how most people are being lied to about all of this.
Well, I think we're programmed to, from an early age to, I mean, I the first job I had when I was like a sophomore in high school, I mean, I put my money into a Roth 401 or Roth IRA, and I put my money into the Vanguard 500 index. And that was just like the only option to put your money into. And I didn't really learn that you know, there was other options until I was like, you know, graduated college, and you know, I was probably ahead of my time with that stuff. And you know, you've got all these, there's this internet forum out there called Boggleheads, and these guys think that they have it all correct. But I mean, like, what are the returns that those guys are getting? It's like sub 10%. I mean, just look at, you know, just take a look at your single family home rental that we do. I mean, I have a video on my YouTube channel where I go over the, you know, I'm, you know, this is how you make 35% with appreciation, mortgage pay down, tax benefits. And I'm kind of blanking on the last one, but it comes out to like, you know, well over 20% conservatively. So why, when you go get a REIT, you're making like sub 10%? Like, what the heck happened to all my money, right? Where did the 10, 20% delta go?
Right.
Right? It's going to these guys who are stealing your money and all these fancy buildings. I mean, that's why every like bank looks pristine, right? That's why there's all these fancy portfolios. I mean, all that is overhead.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. And REITs particularly, I mean, you've got these investments, they're so far removed from the actual source that, you know, it's like if you can get right to the source, why would you want to be three levels removed from it? And that's exactly what a REIT does. And you do not get the benefits that you get from owning like these high performing single family, multifamily properties.
Right. I mean, you're a little nicer than I am. I mean, when people are say, well, I want to invest in real estate, I'm going to do a REIT, I kind of do the facepalm thing. But like, I mean, it's not ownership in real estate. It's ownership in like somebody else managing your fund, a fund that manages a fund that owns real estate, and everybody's getting paid. And just look at the returns, right? And you don't own anything. You're not the direct owner.
Right, exactly. And then, of course, you don't get the tax benefits that you get from owning actual real estate.
Right, right. Well. I mean, so many reasons.
Right. Now, let's talk a little bit about owning your own home that you live in. I've done, you know, videos on this, and it certainly I've written about it, and it's controversial, right? The idea that, oh, the home I live in, that's the best investment I can make, right? If I own the home I live in, God, that's, you know, that was the American dream, right? That was the dream. If I can own the home I live in, then that's it, right? I've hit gold. You make the argument like I do that it's not a good investment. So I'm going to let you handle this one because I've been yelled at enough times on this one. But mostly people, they come back to me with like arguments that don't, you know, that don't often work. So I want to hear your argument as to why owning the home you live in is not a good investment.
Yeah. So, I mean, for a lot of people that are probably listening, that have the time to listen to a podcast, you probably live in an area where the rent to value ratios are, you know, it's very expensive to own in comparison to rent. So I would say if you fall on the side of, 0.8% rent to value ratio, if it's higher than that, you might want to think about buying, you know, like maybe some parts of Texas used to be like that. Or, you know, I mean, maybe at Kansas City, it might work. But as we know, as you get to the higher A-class properties, A-minus, B-plus properties, the rent to value curve is not straight. It's not a linear equation. It's a curved thing, right? That's why we try and stay at the B minus B properties, where we stay in that bend, that highest ROI in a way of return from the ownership of the home. So you know, by getting a rental or a home, you're not getting much value out of it. So for us that live on the West Coast, Los Angeles, Seattle, Hawaii, or New York, or Boston, or DC, I mean, a lot of the rent-to-value ratios are 0.5% or lower. And if you go into the luxury areas, like, you know, $800,000 or more, I mean, here in Hawaii, I mean, every home is $1 million. I mean, even the junk ones. And right. you're looking at rents at $2,500, $3,000 a month, and it's like a 0.3%.
Yeah, it's brutal. And I just ran some numbers on my house here, like just doing some Zillow's estimates, you know, on what my property would rent for in my neighborhood. I live in an A-class neighborhood, and my house was expensive, and the rent would be roughly like $4,300 a month if I'm lucky. Right. It's about
you're living in like a $1.5 million home or something like that.
And you know, my return on investment for rent on this property would be 1%. I mean, that's awful. And that's if I'm lucky, right? And then so
that's actually pretty good, you know. I mean, compared to other places, that was my guess was 1.5 or higher.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, because you know it's New Jersey, so it's going to be. But nevertheless, like that doesn't make any sense from a from an ownership standpoint. And I really grappled with it. You know, I own the home I live in, but I know. Imagine, you know, the argument is too is imagine if you had that down payment money that you were going to spend on a property like this or one in Hawaii. What could you do, you know, with that money? How many rental properties could you buy? How many apartment complexes could you buy? You know, for me, I could buy like 8 properties, right, with that down payment. And now all of those properties, if they're cash flowing, you know, $700 a month, you know, 700 times 8 a month, that's $5,600 a month. Well more, you know, way more than any kind of rent I could pay. So I could move into a great house in the same neighborhood, rent it, and have – those properties paying my rent and not having to worry about repairs and not having to worry about other things, property taxes and all of those other things that you would have to worry about by owning your own home.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously the emotional downside to this is, of course, we don't live in a vacuum. A lot of us have partners. And they have come from an area where they want to have a home to live in. You know, they want to put pictures on the wall. They want to do rehab. They want to make the kitchens nice. And sometimes they think you can't do that in a rental. But, you can. And when you can control like a more expensive property for the same amount that you pay for your mortgage, I mean, that's a good way to kind of sell that point. I mean, now you can say, hey, you know, we're living in a $600,000 home and our mortgage is $2,000. Now, if I take that if our mortgage is probably about $3,000. Now, if we take that $3,000 and find a rental, now we can afford a $1 million home. And this is what it looks like. This is what the fixtures look like. This is what the kitchen looks like. How does that sound now? You know?
Right.
You sure you are not putting those pictures up really that big of a deal now?
Right.
That's all how you kind of sell it.
Oh, you've got an infinity pool? I mean, I know someone that does that out in California, you know, lives in Malibu and rents the home. He owns, I think, 300 properties. But he rents the home he lives in because he wants this beautiful infinity pool and he lives there and he's lived there for years and he rents the place. But his passive income covers everything else. So he doesn't have to maintain this house, but he still gets to live in the house of his dreams. So it's just a different way of thinking about it. People will say, well, what about the equity I could pull out? I could use a home equity line of credit and pull money out and buy rental properties. And yes, you can. But again, I come back to the argument that putting down money, all of that down payment money that's cash – now you're basically investing in a place that you live in, and you're not seeing any passive income from all of that money that you just placed on that property.
Right. Yeah. So I kind of bring it home to people of my generation, and I'm in my 30s now, and this is how people get into trouble. This is like if you were to engineer a way to keep people working at their jobs forever, this is exactly what you do. You try and trick these young couples into. And even if they're making like $100,000, $150,000 as a dual income, which is pretty good pay in a lot of places, you dupe them into buying like a $5,000-$6,000 home, and that's like a mortgage of a few thousand dollars. And then, I mean, their income is like, after all the taxes and everything, they only have like about $5,000-$6,000 of free cash flow. And now you're going to take most of that out. And that's why my website's like Simple Passive Cash Flow. That passive cash flow or the cash flow is your freedom. If you have cash flow coming in, you have the freedom to move where you want. You have the freedom to do what you want to do. And by taking away your cash flow, now you're stuck at your job. You're JOB, as Kiyosaki said, you're just over broke, just right. Like everybody else in this country. And it's a way, it's probably the biggest way that you screw yourself for 30 years at least, but potentially a lifetime, because you have no cash flow and you have no freedom to do what you want.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Lane, when you're looking to sort of snowball your investments and you're growing your portfolio, what advice do you have for people that, you know, they got one or two properties and they want to start moving their money, they want to start expanding that portfolio? When someone's in that model, one or two properties, where do you go? How do you teach them?
I always try and, you know, I take a 6-month a coaching client in, and I usually try and curate them based on how much income they have. I mean, some people, it's simple. They don't have that much money. You know, that they might just be on one income, and it comes down to how much money do you make after your expenses. So I say the threshold is about $30,000 a year that you can save. So if you're making any less than 30, or you're saving less than $30,000 a year, then you're probably going to only be buying at most one rental property a year, which is great, right? Like, you're better off than like 99% of people out there.
Right.
But I mean, it's simple, right? Just like go to Morris Invest and like pick up a property there every year, right? And that's just what you're going to have to be doing, right?
Right.
I mean, you don't really have too many options. But for some of these guys who have like, I mean, it's kind of sad when people have like about $500,000 liquid. And I'm like, dude, like, what are you doing? Like, you should have been retired like 10, 15 years ago, but they're still working. But I mean, that's when it gets difficult. And that's when it's not a straightforward answer. And yeah, you can get a lot of single family homes. But at some point, it's difficult to scale. And it's hard to formulate a big portfolio of, you know, that makes sense. That's good for someone with that big of a war chest. So it comes down to, you know, how much do you have to work with? How much liquidity do you have? And how much money are you bringing in every year after you pay the mortgage, the car, the expenses, the vacations? And, you know, I try and take a holistic approach. And I mean, I don't really take anybody who doesn't have more than $30,000 of passive income coming in already, even like it's from their job. I call it passive income because for a lot of people, the W-2 job is sort of passive. So at that point, it becomes a lot harder situation. What do I do? Like, what do I invest in? You know, I mean, there's a lot of different things that they can do. But
that's wonderful.
I always think the single family home portfolio, you need to get a few of them for experience, and then you can figure out, well, what do you want from there? What's your freedom number? What do you want to accomplish here? Do you just want to get as high cash flow so you can live in semi-retirement? You're still going to work your day job, but you just want to be a little bit, have a little more security. Or do you want to, go this, you know, you want to be kind of like emulate what I do. And I mean, I've started this when I was in my early 20s and I'm 32 now. And I want to take this as hard, as fast as I can go before other, you know, I have kids or something like that happens, and I want to do something else. And it's different. It's no simple answer for everybody. And, you know, that's what I try and talk to people about.
That's great. That's great. So what is next for you? You're 32, you moved back to Hawaii, you're working an engineering job, but you've got to live in the land of where you want to be. What's next for you?
So, I mean, it's no secret. It's a kind of a market out there, and just being a little more patient with deals. And it's kind of the reason moving back home to Hawaii, because, you know, we may be in this environment for quite a while, and I'm not buying a deal unless the numbers make sense, just like how you guys don't, right? Like, you're not going to buy a property unless it's cash flowing a certain and meeting your criteria. So I'm going into multifamily syndications where I only just pull the trigger on deals that absolutely make sense. I mean, they're kind of the needles in the haystack, the deals that we picked up off probate that's stabilized cash flow at like 8-10%, but then there's this huge upside that you can force the equity and you know, increase the value and get double digit returns every year for myself and other people. So I'm kind of playing in a world of syndication where I can, you know, put in a little bit of my money and bring others with me, and that's kind of what I'm trying to do these next few years. But as you know, things always change, right? I mean, I might just hit my number and just call it quits.
Right.
Or, you know, I might have kids or something like that, or just find some other international country to live in and just kind of do what Michael Jordan did and take a little hiatus and come back. I don't know. I mean, I have the option to do what I want.
Right. Well, that's great. Well, Lane, the website, Simple Passive Cash Flow, we're going to link it up in our show notes page for this episode. This is episode 251. So you go to our website and go to the podcast page, and you'll get all of the links and things we've talked about today on the show. So, Lane, you have some free stuff you want to give our audience. Tell us where we can go to find it.
Yeah, if you can go to simplepassivecashflow.com, sign up for the Hui Deal Pipeline Club, which is access to the deals that I come across, some private money lending, some bigger projects. And also, if you don't want to do that questionnaire there, you can still get access to all the spreadsheets that I use, different financial spreadsheets, analysis spreadsheets, and some other cool things that I put into this Google Drive for a bunch of Easter egg freebies for people. And just by signing up for the email mailing list.
Perfect. Perfect. We'll check all of that out. And thanks so much, Lane, for joining us on the show. And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing to the podcast. And have a wonderful holiday season, by the way. I hope you have a wonderful holiday. And we will be back here on Monday. Yes, Monday, with another episode of the Investing in Real Estate show. Much love to you all. Now go out there, take action, and become a real estate investor.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar. With a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.